This podcast was recorded Thursday, December 5th at 1 o'clock p.m. Things may have changed by the time you hear this. Yeah, like Governor DeWine will get some of the blame for Ohio State's losing streak against Michigan. You know, the governor is 1-4 in his bets with the Michigan governor. He's starting to run out of Ohio novelties to send up there. This year, Governor Whitmer is getting a bag of dum-dum lollipops. Let's talk politics. This is Snollygoster, WOSU Public Media's weekly look at Ohio politics and all those Snollygosters, those shrewd politicians who make bets with other shrewd politicians. I'm Mike Thompson. Coming up in the podcast, the Ohio House once again selectively sticks to the Constitution's home rule provision. But first, the fight over Ohio redistricting reform is over, at least for now. Voters last month soundly rejected a measure that would have appointed an independent, non-political commission to draw legislative and congressional district lines. Supporters of the effort are regrouping, and they're trying to determine their next steps. But an Ohio lawmaker says he has an alternate solution: expand the size of the legislature. Senator Bill Blessing of suburban Cincinnati wants to increase the size of the Ohio House from 99 members to 153 members, and the Ohio Senate from 33 members to 51 members. That means both chambers would increase by 54%. That's our main topic of discussion today, and joining me to discuss this proposal is Senator Bill Blessing. Senator, welcome.
Hey, pleasure to be here.
First, this trigger warning. You know, we in public media love trigger warnings. We caution you that this episode will include a lot of numbers. We'll try to surf over them, but you may want to get a pencil and a piece of paper. All right. Senator, as you probably know, as I'm sure you know, lawmakers are not always popular. So you're telling us we need more of them. Why?
So the whole reason behind this was, you know, whether you look at issue one that recently failed at the ballot or even the current redistricting process, both speak to proportional representation. And looking at it mathematically, you can tell that proportional representation to some degree is a function of district size. And to explain that, think of a statewide district. Mm-hmm. You have, the governor's mansion is, you know, either 100% Republican or 100% Democrat, to simplify things. And the statewide splits 55-45 for the most part in favor of Republicans.
Yep.
That is about as far away from proportional representation as you can mathematically get. However, at the other extreme, which is everybody's their own representative, which would be a direct democracy, you would have proportional representation by definition. So, you know, that's good. But of course, direct democracy has its own problems.
Yeah. Can't vote on everything.
The answer lies somewhere in the middle. And I chose the 51-153 because it seemed like a modest change. We're still well over the average size of state Senate and House seats when compared to the rest of the country. And I think that it would just enhance any redistricting plan. This would work with and not impede the current redistricting process. If issue one had passed, that too, or even what the governor seems to be pushing, which is the Iowa plan.
Yeah.
So that's the logic behind it.
Yeah. We'll get to the redistricting and the gerrymandering issue in just a moment, but let's just look at where Ohio stands. You know, we're right now in the bottom third of states in terms of the size of our state legislature, our House and our Senate. New Hampshire has the biggest. It has 400 House members. You know, New Hampshire is a very beautiful place. It doesn't have that many people, but it has 400 House members. That's huge. And Alaska, I think, has the lowest number of House members. Minnesota has the most senators, 67. Alaska has the fewest. So you want to get us more into the average range, which is in that, you know, 100 to 150. We're at 100 now, but basically 130 to 150 members in the House.
So what the way this works is, I mean, state's population is going to matter a lot too.
Yep.
Ohio has the fourth largest by population state Senate seats in the country.
Wow.
At roughly 360,000. California is larger than us, I believe, either Texas or Florida. They're up there as well. We're larger than all of our surrounding states. And the average, just to give you an idea of the average state Senate size, it's about 160,000. So we're more than twice the size of the average Senate seat in the country. Mm-hmm. This wouldn't even take us out of the top 10 for largest districts in the country. So it really is a modest change.
Yeah, and the Senate generally is small. I mean, of course, in the U.S. Congress, the Senate is only 100 members and the House is 435. So the Senate generally tends to be, you know, the upper chamber, represents more people. So your plan still has the Senate as quite a bit larger than the House.
Oh, yeah. It would still be the way it is in Ohio, which is the Senate seats are three times the size of the House seats. Mm-hmm.
Looking at the states that neighbor Ohio, they all have more state lawmakers than Ohio does, but not by much. Indiana, Kentucky, West Virginia all have one more House member than Ohio does, and they have slightly more Senate members. Michigan is a little different. They have 150 House members and 38 senators. So that's 150 is close to what you'd like to get at.
Correct. But those states also have lower populations. Mm-hmm. So the number of constituents represented is a lot lower than it is in Ohio. And that's the key. You want to have members representing fewer constituents. And by extension, that would be smaller areas. Mm-hmm. 'Cause once you get to a point where you're representing like statewide, for example, it's really hard to get to know, you know, the vast majority of your constituents. And there was a gentleman, I'm failing to remember his name. I was a professor from out of New Jersey. We were talking about this on NPR that they did some research and found that people were happier with their representatives when the districts were smaller. Mm-hmm. And that stands to reason, given that, you know, it's easier to work with a smaller district.
Yeah, you get to know the person a little bit better. I mean, Michael Tomosky, the author, and he's the editor of The New Republic, he has argued for a larger Congress to help break up our political gridlock. He points to the British model, where each member of parliament in the UK represents 105,000 people. Here in the States, each member of Congress represents 761,000 people. So if we use the same ratio here, we would have more than 3,000 members of Congress. You don't want to go that far, do you?
Oh, no. That, Anna Staver brought that up, that if Ohio tried to get the same population per representative that New Hampshire got, we would have something like 3,500 representatives. We'd basically be like the Senate in Star Wars,
yes,
where you have rows and rows of holograms of people, but no. I mean, for Congress, most of the plans were to add anywhere from 50, 100, or 150 members in total, which, you know, even that would be a modest reform compared to what would have occurred had it not been capped in the late 20s at the current 435.
Yeah. Speaking of the Senate and Star Wars and the holograms, where are y'all going to sit? Is there room at the State House for all you?
So I think, well, logistically, I think we can figure that out. I mean, just looking at the Senate, you know, if you get a chance to walk in there, the desks are pretty large.
Yeah, you got some space. Yeah. Nice big desks.
They are, right. And they could be very easily, you know, shrunk to accommodate this. I don't think there'd be much problem there. The House, maybe a little bit more of a challenge, but in the end, I think they could get to it, you know, find some way to accommodate that.
How about the cost of this? This, you know, if you add 50% to both chambers, you're adding 50% more lawmakers, 50% more lawmakers' staffs. What kind of cost are we looking at here?
So, you know, without being able to, you know, like get a lot of research right off the bat on something like that, you know, just the quick back of a napkin math is $5 million in salaries alone. Mm-hmm. For these new members. So I just tripled that to include, well, that's, you know, there's pensions, there's, you know, staff, and obviously more than one staffer, depending on whether they're chair or not. So we'll just say 15 million per fiscal year. Mm-hmm. But it's important to keep in mind that Ohio's budgets are, you know, our last one was $90 billion. that is, you know, really a rounding error when you look at our budget overall. And I, you know, have several ways to find that money to fund this. But in the end, I think it would be worth it, irrespective of that.
Yeah, I know. I remember when the Governor Kasich turned down the $17 million for rail. And I noted that the intersection of two rural highways in northern Delaware County cost $17 million, same price for one intersection that he turned down. So in a huge state budget, you know, $10 million, it's a lot to all of us, but it's not that big a deal. So back to redistricting and trying to solve the gerrymandering problem. You know, Pennsylvania has a larger legislature than us, 203 members. Texas has 150 target in there. But various groups have labeled still those states among the most gerrymandered. Will this solve the gerrymandering problem?
No. I mean, this isn't actually dealing with the process of redistricting. So this doesn't really change any of the rules. I just think that it makes the proportional representation issue, problem, whatever you want to call it, easier to resolve. Mm-hmm. That's really the end all be all with this. And I think it would be easier in the end to draw more compact seats if you're drawing more of them as opposed to, you know, fewer of them.
Yeah, you're still going to have, under the current system, you still have politicians picking their voters, and that fancy map making software will just, you could just get fancier maps with smaller districts, but you know, they have to do more of that with more members. So it could help.
Well, that's one caveat that I bring up to people with this, that, you know, okay, if this doesn't solve issues with redistricting, you know, why would we want to do this? You know, it's the same process is in place. But I would point out that the Ohio Senate has, for the past 10 years, been over 70% Republican, and the Ohio House has never been able to breach that 70% mark. Mm-hmm. They just haven't been able to do it. And Republicans have had the pencil we had it, you know, in 2021, 2011, 2001. I think we had it in 1991. So like four of the last traditional cycles for redistricting, Republicans have had the pencil, and yet have never been able to get House numbers up as high as Senate numbers.
Yeah, the House numbers are still pretty high, though.
Yeah, but it shows that there is merit to the idea that adding more seats will reduce that proportional representation.
How about the influence of money? What impact do you see this having? If there are more state reps and more state senators, does that mean there's less influence of money in each individual district? Or does that mean that, you know, the interested parties, you know, the big donors, just have to spend more money, give more money?
So the good professor mentioned this yesterday on NPR that, yes, this actually does reduce the influence of money in two ways. One is that now with 204 members of the legislature as opposed to 132, it you know, all things being equal, it dilutes the money. So the races themselves, only so much can go into them now. I mean, like, unless, you know, tons and tons of money or more were going to be dumped into the system. But I don't think that would be the case. And as you can tell with, you know, whether you look at the U.S. Senate races, which, I mean, Brown versus Moreno was 700 million.
Yeah. It's crazy.
And the further down you get to like township and, you know, city and village races, they, you know, tend to be things that can be done out of pocket. There will still be expensive competitive races, but I don't think they will be as bad as they have been in the past. So that's part one. Part two is that money, I think, matters to a degree. What will happen is when you have these smaller districts, you have like the ability of somebody who's a teacher who's taught in a single large school district for many, many years, and the families know this teacher. How much is money really going to matter? I mean, attack ads and things like that, people see it and they're like, wait a minute, I've known this teacher for years. These are lies. You can spend all the money you want. We know this person in our community. And that's a key point. They're, you know, as legislators become more firmly anchored to their district with smaller districts, because you have to know everybody, the effect of money will be diminished even further, which, of course, I think is a tremendously good thing. So,
yeah, no, as someone who has to raise money, I'm sure. And door knocking and grassroots campaigning, will the smaller the office, the smaller the district, the easier it is to do that. And actually, the more important it is to get out there yourself or get your supporters out there to actually just go face to face with voters and ask for their vote and not rely on media and that kind of thing.
That's an excellent point. Yes, that's absolutely right. I mean, it's one thing with, you know, a congressional seat that's, you know, roughly 800,000. I don't know how many doors that would be, but it's probably at least 100,000. It would take an army months to go knock all those doors. But a House district under this plan that would be 77,000 people, you might be able to hit half of them.
Yeah,
with a small group of people.
Yeah,
so you're right.
Let's get to the bottom line here. This would take a constitutional amendment, which is what voters tried to do with redistricting and with the abortion amendment last year. So this needs to go to the voters, but lawmakers can put it before the voters. They don't have to get the signatures if the certain percentage of lawmakers vote for it. The bottom line is, you know, the legislature is controlled by Republicans, large majorities, just turned back a strong, very strong redistricting reform effort. What's the raw political motivation to change what seems to be working now for the party in power?
So a couple things. One, this, I mean, it's, I think, just good public policy, obviously. Two, I think this is something that Democrats actually would appreciate. And I think that that is going to matter simply because, yes, you're right. Issue one did fail in November. Trump won the state with, I think, 11 points or so. Mm-hmm. 11.3 was, I think, the number I heard. But Republicans have unified control of Congress and White House, and we have unified control of the General Assembly and the Governor's Mansion. And so historically, midterms have gone against the party in power. And I have to imagine in the coming years that there will probably be another push for redistricting reform. And if the, you know, electoral, what's the word I'm looking for here? I guess the terrain is different.
Yeah.
You know, there may be a different outcome. So I think it would behoove the Republican Party, of which I am a member, to come up with some reform that gets Democrats support, and we can put it on the ballot and hopefully be, you know, have it be dispositive of the issue. And I think that can only occur if Democrats support it as well. And frankly, this is also, you know, sort of a prophylactic measure. I mean, my father was in the General Assembly back in the 80s as a Republican, and they were in the deep minority in the House. I think the Democrats had up to 66 seats at one point. And having this, you know, larger General Assembly, yes, it would cut down on overall Republican majorities, but the reverse is also true if the state greatly flipped the other way.
Oh, yeah. Gerrymandering is a bipartisan activity.
Right. It would protect Republicans from going into the deep minority the way that they were back in the 80s. And you're right. It would foster more bipartisanship.
How about linking it to extending term limits or eliminating term limits? I know that's been floated out there, you know, to try to eliminate sort of the revolving door, so to speak, of lawmakers, you know, coming and going before they really get experience. It would seem like this might be a logical link to support for that. I don't know if that would violate the single issue rule where you can only have one issue per item, but you know.
Yeah, I mean, those would probably be two separate issues on the ballot. But, you know, I think that's right. I think there would be some sort of reform. And I've heard that talked about before. Mm-hmm. But in order for something like that to be done, actually, I think anything to be done really in this space and succeed at the ballot, it's going to need both parties in favor of it. I mean, that's just the reality of it.
Well, if you can do that, Senator Blessing, You deserve some kind of medal if we can get some kind of bipartisan, other than, like, you know, the Dolly Parton license plate. That's easy. And this is the hard stuff. So anyway, Senator Bill Blessing, thanks very much for joining us here on Snollygoster.
Yeah, my pleasure. Thank you very much.
Thank you. We'll be right back.
We could all use a little help navigating the news these days. The Consider This podcast wants to give you a hand. 6 days a week, we'll help you make sense of the day's biggest news story and what it means for you in less than 15 minutes. Listen now to the Consider This podcast from NPR.
Ohio's Constitution has a provision that says local governments have the power to make their own rules unless they conflict with state law. And state lawmakers have been very selective on which laws local officials can enact. Cities and townships, for example, can ban wind and solar farms, but state law says they cannot stop a fracking drilling well. And there are dozens of other similar examples. Well, this week, the Ohio House said local governments should have the power to pay their own bills. It's not exactly the same thing, but it's kind of close. The Ohio House approved a bill that requires local governments pay more money into police and fire retirement funds. The funds claim they need more money to avoid cuts to retirement benefits for police officers and firefighters. The statewide cost would be an extra $80 million a year. Of course, cities complained loudly. They say they can't afford that, and they will be forced to cut their budgets in other areas, perhaps avoid hiring more police officers and cutting benefits and lowering pay as well. But the House said, in essence, well, figure it out. The cities have hope, though, the bill must pass the state Senate in the next week or so during the lame duck session. If that does not happen, a solution will fall to the next legislature. Time now for our Snollygoster of the Week segment, where we honor the shrewdest politician or political move of the week. This one is a holiday leftover. Governor DeWine seems reluctant to wade into the transgender rights culture war. He vetoed the bill that banned transgender care for minors and banned transgender athletes from competing in sports that do not match their birth identity. The legislature overrode that veto, and it became law anyway. Well, last month, the legislature passed another bill that bans transgender students from using bathrooms that fit their gender identities. It applies to all public schools, kindergarten through college and universities. Mike DeWine was kind of quiet on that bill as it worked its way through the legislature. He was quiet until the evening of November 27th, when he signed it, without comment. Did you miss this news? Well, maybe it was because he signed it late on the Wednesday before Thanksgiving and the long holiday weekend. There is trying to bury a story on a normal Friday afternoon, and then there's burying and entombing a story in concrete the night before a major holiday weekend. Very shrewd. And for that, Governor DeWine gets our Snollygoster of the Week award. That will do it for this week's edition of Snollygoster. We are part of the NPR network. As always, try to give us a good review on Apple Podcasts, wherever you get your podcasts. Tell your friends about us. For our student producer, Katie Genius, our digital producer, Michael DeBonis, and our radio engineer, Dalton Jones, I'm Mike Thompson for Snollygoster from WOSU Public Media.